Welcome to the Art of Medicine, the program that explores the arts, business, and clinical aspects of the practice of medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Wilner. Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Harsha Rajam Simha, founder and chairman of the Indo-US Organization of Rare Diseases. But before we get started, I'd like to thank our sponsor, locumstory.com. If you're considering locum tenens, either full-time or on the side, you probably have a question or two, or 20. Fortunately, locumstory.com has the answers you need. It's packed with unbiased information and advice from physicians like you. Locumstory.com has nothing to sell. It's simply a resource for information. You'll find super handy tools that let you see locums trends for your specialty, compare different locums agencies, and there's even a quiz to help you decide if locums is right for you. Locumstory.com is the perfect place to start if you want to learn more about locums. And now, Dr. Harsha Rajam Simha, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, to get started, tell us a little bit about your background.
So, Andrew, I started as a computer science engineer from Bangalore, India, which is considered the Silicon Valley of India. And I came to Virginia Tech for my graduate school in 2001, just when the Human Genome Project was just getting completed. And completed my master's thesis on integration of metabolic databases for human disease, and then went on to do my PhD in a highly interdisciplinary program called Genetics, Bioinformatics, and Computational Biology, which kind of is at the intersection of computer science, medicine, and molecular biology. And so got really interested in that space and at that intersection, and that's where I've spent last 20 years or so covering experience at the National Institutes of Health, FDA. And along the way, life happened, and that turned me from being a scientist into a social entrepreneur helping patients with rare diseases.
Okay, so just to step back, one of the things that's happened with science and the studies of the human genome is there's a lot of details, right? There's hundreds and thousands of genes that you need to track and you want to compare to other genes. So I can see where genes and computer science kind of go together, and these giant databases. And of course, the quality of the information has to be good going in, but then you have to learn how to sort it, right? And find what you're looking for. Okay, so that's your background. Now, rare diseases. What is a rare disease?
Any disease that affects fewer than 200,000 Americans is considered rare in the U.S. By the U.S. FDA. And today we are celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Orphan Drug Act of 1983, which U.S. became the first country to adopt, primarily to accelerate investments, research, development of treatments and diagnostics for rare diseases. As the name indicates, individual disease is quite rare, but there are more than 10,800 known rare diseases as of now, and 250 new rare diseases approximately are being discovered each year due to advances in science and our ability to diagnose. And so worldwide, there is over 400 million people affected by rare diseases, which is equivalent to diabetes, to put it in context. And so rare disease, 80% of the time, happens to be genetic in origin, which means they are usually inherited. Sometimes they are congenital, where a random mutation could occur sometime after conception. And so 20% of the time, they are not genetic, which means it could be a protein modification or post-translational type disease causation.
Now, you mentioned the word social, and I think it's important to emphasize. You know, you would think, well, I got a rare disease. That's a good thing. Doesn't happen too often. And the doctors will be more interested in it because it's rare. But But there's a downside to having a rare disease. Tell us about that.
Usually it takes an average of 5 to 7 years, Andrew, to get a proper diagnosis for a patient suffering from any rare disease. And that's usually a long enough time that the patient's health condition has deteriorated. You know, as with any disease, early diagnosis is very critical in properly treating that condition, if possible. But in the case of rare diseases, more than 90% of the time, there is no approved treatment options available. And which means the best thing that can happen to a patient diagnosed with a rare disease is enrolling in a clinical trial, as that's probably the only hope or the last hope of getting some help, if not a cure, unless it happens to be a gene therapy or a cell therapy, which happened to have a curative effect. But otherwise, most of the time, at least a palliative care to keep their lifestyle from falling apart.
Right. And so I think people don't realize, and you know, you're not going to think about it. Say you mentioned diabetes or you have hypertension. These are very common. There are millions and millions of people. But the good thing is, there's, you know, the American Diabetes Society, there are all these organizations. And then, of course, the pharmaceutical companies have created medications for hypertension, for diabetes. There's a marketplace. There's a lot of customers. And so there's a lot of incentive to create medications. And in fact, there are many choices for people that have no cure yet for diabetes or hypertension, but certainly many, many ways to treat them. But if you're one of a million and you go to, you know, CVS, there's nothing there for you. That's the problem. And you mentioned clinical trials. I mean, that's pretty fancy. You have to be near a university or the National Institutes of Health. You know, your local doctor isn't going to be able to enroll you in typically in a clinical trial. So all of a sudden, the level of care that you require becomes very sophisticated.
Exactly. And these experts in specific rare diseases do exist many times, and they know the limitations of what is possible and what latest advances are upcoming from a research point of view. And so patient advocacy groups, parents of these children or adults affected by rare disease, they tend to be the warriors. You know, they push the needle, they bring various stakeholders together, form a nonprofit advocacy organization, bring and demand from scientists and doctors, do something for us. You know, use our samples, use us as your case, and apply your scientific minds to help accelerate diagnostics and treatment options for this community.
Now, how did you come to get involved with rare diseases?
As with many people involved in the rare diseases community, Andrew, I am no exception in that I was personally touched by a rare disease in my family when I and my wife had a child born in 2012, the second of three children that we have. And the second child was diagnosed at birth with a congenital rare disease called Edwards syndrome. And that was a devastating diagnosis, as babies are not viable or compatible with life, as we were told in the birthing room, essentially. And the baby was put on ventilators, and 4 days later, the baby passed away. And so that really gave me the patient perspective, family perspective, and the caregiver perspective on what families with someone affected by a rare disease go through. In our case, the odyssey was not there. It was short-lived. You know, from diagnosis to end of life was 4 days. But that journey could be 5 years, 20 years, 50 years in some cases. Nonetheless, you know, families have to go sacrifice their career options, their travel. They have a lot of financial burden, needless to say. Many even go bankrupt as a result of the costs involved with managing and treating these rare diseases. So in this journey, I learned about various assistance programs, resources, expertise available from starting from National Institutes of Health, Office of Rare Disease Research, to FDA's Patient Affairs and Orphan Drug Division, and the National Organization for Rare Disorders, Global Genes, and many other advocacy organizations focused on specific individual rare diseases or a subset of rare diseases. And they bring a lot of immediate knowledge to a family which is newly diagnosed with a rare disease. Nobody expects this to happen. It always comes as a shock. Nobody expects something like that. And they have somewhere to start. You know, they don't have to reinvent the wheel and do all this research. There is a place to go seek in latest and greatest information about clinical trials on clinicaltrials.gov. So I founded this nonprofit Indo-US Organization for Rare Diseases after having spent now 10 years and 4 years ago when I first founded this to help other patients and families, particularly of the Asian and Indian diaspora, who lack more awareness about this. As I mentioned earlier, the Orphan Drug Act was established in the US 40 years ago. India, for example, as a country, put their first national policy for rare diseases only a few years ago, you know, less than 5 years ago. And so there's been more awareness as a result of the advocacy efforts that I initiated back in 2013 by co-founding the National Organization for Rare Disorders in India, and much later, the Indo-US Organization for Rare Diseases. So we are now trying to have this technology-based patient concierge where we keep receiving requests from families seeking assistance, either financial, medical, diagnostic, expert information, clinical trial access from anywhere in the world. They contact us on this technology platform. They usually tend to be Asian diaspora, but they don't have to be. They could be any other patient. And we provide the latest and greatest information by pulling them from credible resources and sources like NIH has a concierge called GARD, which many are not aware of. It's a genetic disease database and a telephone service or an email concierge. And also all these other resources that I mentioned earlier. We also run this Patient Foundation Alliance, where individual organizations focused on advocating for certain patient communities affected by a group of rare diseases, they sign up as a member organization of our alliance, and usually they tend to have disproportionate prevalence of these genetic diseases in India or Asia. And so, like, for example, leukodystrophies or certain metabolic rare diseases where certain enzymes are not produced enough, like lysosomal storage disorders, and several other types like muscular dystrophies or blood-related disorders like hemophilia, sickle cell disease, thalassemia, which are all rare in the US, but are common in Middle East and Asia, particularly in India. And so these are great opportunities where we can help create for US-based organizations to connect with patients and communities in India, because the disease affects across borders and all humans who may have the genetic mutation, and on vice versa, from medical doctors, patients in India to have access to research, learnings, and other collaborations on the US side. So we facilitate this cross-border engagement to make this truly more of a global network and collaborations, which is, in my opinion, the critical missing piece. You know, as historically rare diseases are being dealt with at regional levels or national levels, but what we really need is looking at a disease as a human disease and bringing all humans affected by the disease together so we can better understand the natural history of the disease among all the populations and not just focus on a certain segment of the populations.
Wow. Well, first of all, I'm very touched by your personal story. And, you know, there's probably no personal impact such as losing a child as a motivator. But I'm really impressed at how you've taken that terrible experience and turned it into a positive and productive effort to help other families in a really big way. And you're absolutely right that, you know, even from way, way back, in fact, at the beginning of the internet, it was a very famous case when we were still using dial-up modems. There was a woman in China who had been hospitalized. You may be familiar with this story. And her boyfriend desperately was sending out emails across the world. Who can help my girlfriend? She works in a chemistry lab and now she's in a coma and her hair is falling out. Those were the kind of key things. And no one in China could figure it out. And she was dying. And I looked at this because this was very exciting. It's like, wow, it's a consult, you know, from China. And it turned out that she had thallium poisoning and, you know, radiation poisoning. And she worked in the right place. She had exposure. And one of the key things is your hair falls out, you know, like we see in the movies from, you know, radiation poisoning. And so they had a diagnosis and, you know, they were able to treat her appropriately. And this is like the first known global, you know, effort where now that, you know, we live on a planet where everybody can communicate, you know, even in probably the most rural area of India, there's somebody with a cell phone, right? And you're sending money back and forth and, you know, just interacting with the rest of the world. So it makes sense to have a global approach. And I comment also that you're absolutely right. You know, I'm an epileptologist and I work in the world of epilepsy, and there are many nonprofits for epilepsy, one's called Cure, for example. And, but you know, they don't always work in concert. You know, each one is its own kind of thing and they're raising money and they have their own sort of pet projects, all important. Sometimes they overlap, sometimes they don't. And I do medical mission work also in the Philippines, and it's the same thing. There are all these independent agencies, but nobody is kind of at the reins, sort of, communicating and getting everybody on the same page and avoiding duplication and kind of focusing efforts. So to have an organization that brings all of the available information together, because there is a lot, there's not enough, but there is a lot of information certainly for people and to get started anyway, to see where, what they might profit from personally, you know, if they have a child affected by a rare disease.
You're absolutely right, Andrew. And these organizations such as Combined Brain in Tennessee, actually, we collaborate with, and Deep Connections in the Washington, D.C. area, both focused on various epilepsy-related diseases, which are also rare and neurological. And they all come from different perspectives, and the need is so enormous, and the time is short. You know, they all want to see during the lifetime of their child that there is some treatment option that will help their own child, but also many more to come after their child as well. So there is this altruistic mindset, but we need to bring get a lot of things done at very low cost, as you rightly said. They have to raise funds through campaigns and so on. We are no different. As a nonprofit, we have to do that as well. And we have several programs that help us in that. And we are thankful to many corporate sponsors who sign up as a member of our Corporate Alliance program, where we bring orphan drug-focused biotech pharma companies, contract research organizations in where we can get advice and guidance on how we can facilitate this public-private partnerships. You know, at the end of the day, these patient communities have to collaborate with industry partners to accelerate their therapy development process, as that can be quite capital-intensive as well as time-intensive, taking a lot of scientific talent. So, like, one of the things you mentioned, Andrew, is patients living close to NIH or Boston and certain places tend to have better access to care and especially clinical trials and research options at these academic medical centers. And so one of the revolutions that's unfolding is that technology can make these opportunities available, not just for people living close to these academic medical centers, but even those who may be far away from them. Even in the Midwest of US or international in India and other countries, where they may only have to travel to a center once or whenever a need is justifiable, where a treatment or dosing needs to be done. But most of the time, telemedicine, remote patient engagement, questionnaires and surveys and diaries can all be done electronically and digitally these days. And that's another need that I had identified 4 years ago. And many other companies are working in that direction as well, where we built a platform to enable remote patient engagement and remote, and that's the platform that's also supporting this patient concierge service, where patients from anywhere in the world contact us and we can provide free consultations, information exchange, and deliver value and provide this care navigation service at no cost to the patients on this technology platform.
Well, that's fantastic. And I guess the other kind of obvious thing is we talked about rare diseases. So there's a 1 in 10,000 or 1 in 100,000 or 1 in a million occurrence. But the bigger your denominator, in the United States, we have about 300 million people. But in India, we got a lot more, right? I'm not sure what's the current population. It's got to be over a billion, right?
It's 1.4 approximately.
The incidence of rare diseases is the same, but the prevalence is going to be bigger, right?
That's right. And that's exactly the type of questions, you know, for me, living in the Northern Virginia, Washington, D.C. area for the last 22 years, and in the last 10 years of my rare disease entrepreneurial journey, have been attending many conferences. And this is exactly the question that I hear the most frequently asked question is, how can you help us connect with many patients in India? We have about 30 patients in our database in the U.S. We are likely to have 1,000 patients in India for the same disease. But the challenge is, how do we identify them and how do we engage them, connect them? Language is a barrier, culture is a barrier, but in India, most urban population is fluent in English, which is a good thing. But the rural populations may still need language translation and other support for them to meaningfully engage on the digital platforms, which is something we are working on. And the other thing is, we are making these connections now. The channel to really tap into is the medical doctors. You know, the volume of patients that individual doctors see in India is just insane. You know, there's usually a long line of patients just waiting outside any medical genetics doctor's office that you can think of. There's not more than 100 in India for such a large population. So they all get referred to these first-tier and second-tier cities where these trained medical genetics doctors do exist, and they're really fantastic. Now, through these doctors, although they don't necessarily curate a database of all the patients they see, they do have some way of tracking them. And so we have built a network of these medical genetics doctors, both in India, but also growing in US, that we reach out and say, hey, you know, we have a patient group for this latest one that I'm going to pick is DLG4. It's a novel gene mutation that was discovered recently, and the mother is making a lot of funding and investment to identify more patients. Within a short span, they have identified 30, 40 patients with the DLG4 mutation. And they are collaborating with us in identifying more such patients in India. And ADSSL1 is another example, and there are several others that we are working with. You know, like you said, 21 to 22,000 human genes, and any of these genes go faulty, they are bound to cause some disease in the human body, you know, because most of these genes have a function and a reason to exist.
Well, this is just a fantastic, you know, I see the Venn diagram of technology and social and telemedicine kind of all coming together to help people around the world. So how can people get in touch with you if they want to make a donation to this important cause, or if they need, you know, if they need your services? What's the best way to find you?
We are easy to find online. We are IndoUSRare.org. That is IndoUSRare.org. And my email address is Harsha, my first name, at IndoUSRare.org. And I'm also easy to find on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter, and happy to connect with anyone that we can help with any rare disease. We don't know it, we don't have all the answers, but we do likely know someone who does. So we can try and connect, and it takes a village to make any advance in rare disease. So look forward to inviting any patient groups, corporate members, or individual patients and families that we can collaborate.
Oh, that's terrific. I'll put all that information in the show notes. So we're about to wrap up. Is there anything you'd like to add?
I'll just conclude saying the Venn diagram that you just described, Andrew, that's exactly what I drew in my early days of social entrepreneurial journey when I quit my job in 2012. And since then, I've been on an entrepreneurial journey. I said, what have I got over the last, you know, my entire career? Built this computer science, engineering, computational biology, genomics, medicine, rare disease. That's basically everything I got that I'm applying and bringing like-minded people and more smarter people to this mission. And as in this journey has been fantastic and very enriching. So thank you for having me today and allowing me to share the story with your community.
Dr. Harsha Rajam Simha, thank you very much for appearing on The Art of Medicine.
You're welcome.
But before we close, I'd like to give another thanks to our sponsor, locumstory.com, a resource where providers can get real, unbiased answers about locum tenens. I'm Dr. Andrew Wilner. See you next time. This program is hosted, edited, and produced by Andrew Wilner, MD, FACP, FAAN. Guests receive no financial compensation for their appearance on The Art of Medicine. Andrew Wilner, MD, is Associate Professor of Neurology at the University of Tennessee Health Science Center, Memphis, Tennessee. Views, thoughts, and opinions expressed on this program belong solely to Dr. Wilner and his guests and not necessarily to their employers, organizations, or other group or individual. While this program intends to be informative, it is meant for entertainment purposes only. The Art of Medicine does not offer professional financial, legal, or medical advice. Dr. Wilner and his guests assume no responsibility or liability for any damages, financial or otherwise, that arise in connection with consuming this program's content. Thanks for watching. For more episodes of The Art of Medicine, please subscribe. www.andrewwilner.com